Okay, this Shabbos is Shem Gan Lein, Parshas Chukas, and we'll turn in a moment to the Pasuk in the Seder, which will serve as the springboard for our discussion of Halacha, which is our Derech, Baruch Hashem Lishrim, as you know. But first, just by way of a brief introduction, the reason I decided to present on this subject and to discuss this topic this evening was not something that I found in the Seder, actually. We have this 2 weeks ago in Parshas Shlach, or even last week in Parshas Korach, talks about Tchelis. But rather, it's because I heard a shiur earlier in the week, which was delivered by Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita, Yeshiva Torah Das, very prominent Talmud Chacham, Magid Shir, and Rav in Flatbush. More about him in a moment. But Rav Reisman in this shiur explored the subject of Tchelis, and specifically the question of whether the Tchelis HaChadosha, the new Tchelis, which was discovered in the last 20 years or so, and has become popular for people to use in tzitzis, in certain circles, both here in Eretz Yisrael, more so in Eretz Yisrael than here, but a number of places here as well, you find that people wear this Tchelis. This Tchelis is derived, the dye comes from a snail in the Murex family of snails, Murex trunculus to be specific. And Rabbi Reisman Shlita decided to examine whether this, in fact, is the authentic Tchelis. I wasn't at the shiur live. I wasn't there, but I heard a recording of it that somebody sent to me or connected me to. And he says in the shiur that he wants to look into all the relevant sugyas and the gemaras. And he spent a lot of time delving into this matter. He's in correspondence with various people in Eretz Yisrael who are involved in the manufacturing of the Tchelis. And so he came to the conclusion, according to the presenter in the shiur, that he thought that in fact it's not correct, that the Tchelis that people are using from the Murex snail, he says he thought that it has a 0% chance of being correct. That's what he said. He mentioned if it was 50%, over 50%, that's wrong, then we all have to put it on. And if it's a Mir Tamotsoi, he didn't mention exactly, Mir Tamotsoi is assumed to be 10%, so that's how Mishkan Zak and other Rachonim writes in other contexts, so then it would be a good idea to put it on, but he thinks it's not correct. I have to stress, he said it with great covet and derech eretz to the people who use it. This was not an antagonistic kind of presentation, and it was not polemics and politics, it wasn't that. But he feels that it's incorrect, and as somebody who does wear that tchelis myself, I want to respond just to go through some of the issues. And I think his shiur was actually posted. Rabbi Reisman, as I said, is a Talmud Chacham of the first order. There's no question about it. Take that right at the outset. He translated, if I'm not mistaken, several volumes of the Art School Gemara, the Schottenstein Talmud. I think he was one of the translators. And as somebody who's worked as a translator for Art School myself, I know the difficulty of that malacha. And he also published a classic work on Hilchos Ribbis in English, published also by Art School, where he takes Ribbis, a very difficult and complex area of halacha, and he presents it very clearly in English, very clearly, very readable, very organized. You don't write a sefer like that without being a first-rate Talmud Chacham. And perhaps most well-known, the Reisman is most well-known for the Motzei Shabbos Novi Shir that he gives, is attended by hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, in Brooklyn every Motzei Shabbos during the year. And now it's via satellite in numerous other communities, including here in Pinnock, one of the schools in the neighborhood, broadcast the Motzei Shabbos Shir. And so Rabbi Reisman gave this year. This was not, it would seem, I haven't heard that many of the Motzei Shabbos Shirim, but I have heard a number of them. And this was not in that same style. First of all, he didn't start with something in Navi. He usually starts with something in Navi. Sometimes his connection to Navi is like my connection in these Shirim to the Parashat Shavuot. But okay, he usually starts with a Parashat Navi. He didn't hear, and also there were question and answers, which, at least in the Shirim that I heard from the Navi Shirim, he doesn't have entertaining question and answers during the Shirim. But anyway, whenever exactly he gave it, this was his conclusion. I stress, I have great respect for him. I mentioned something else. He gives a shiur in Yeshiva Torah Das, of which he himself is a product. He's a Talmud Muvak of Rav Agon of Palm, Zecher Tzadok Levracha. And he learned from Rav Palm and developed from Rav Palm not only his erudition in terms of being a Talmud Chacham, but also a very fine person. I don't really know him personally. I've spoken to him a couple times on the phone, actually, and I've actually seen him a few times and talked to him briefly of Chassanus, but he's a very, very fine person, even here from this presentation, even though he disagrees, but he acknowledges that the people who are involved at Talmud Chachamim, actually, some of you know my brother-in-law, Dr. Baruch Stern from Efrat, he's the one who actually sent me the link to listen to this year. was not actually in correspondence before, but he's had a couple of emails back and forth after the shiur where he pointed out certain things, and even though you see this mutual covet, everything's done mechanto shel Torah to find the emes. So nothing I say is chas v'shalom. So that shiur is, I think it's even on BCBM. That's why you told. Yes, I don't think it was a regular shiur. I don't know how it got there. Who put it up there? Maybe it wasn't supposed to be up there. I don't know. But somehow my grandma sent me the shiur and I listened to it. So I just want to go through some of the inyanim again, but should not be misconstrued as anything chas v'shalom. In any way negative concern of Reisman, I have great respect for him. One of the things he says is that in order to develop something, a halacha, to come to a halacha conclusion in Psak, so any halacha conclusion has to be based upon the Gemaras and the Sugis and the traditional Mesorah that we have, and the fact that there may be archaeological evidence about something or some type of word that means something in one language and if it's a parallel to another word and it's the same word Chazal used and that indicates this and that. So that's not our derech and psak, that's not our derech and anhaga, and you have to go through the Gemaras, and that's what he did. It's true, absolutely. However, it's possible to misunderstand, I think, from what he said, that archaeological evidence and words and so on, these kind of things, have no place in the process of halacha or psak. I don't think that's accurate. I think that sometimes we find that, in fact, such information can be used to not to determine psak, but perhaps to determine metzias, facts on the ground, or to indicate what people did, or even enhance or support a position in psak. Yeah.
We find that in the Chazal.
Yes, that's how it goes through a couple of those sources right at the outset. That's what I guess in a second. So that's the connection to our subject, because in Parshas Chukas this week, in the first source on the pages, the Midbar, Parakof plus a column, it says, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael, kolo eda midbar tzin, b'chodeshun b'yishav om b'kodesh, v'tom asham mirim v'tekov v'sham, talks about the death of Miriam, and it says, kolo eda, the whole eda came to midbar tzin. When was it? Didn't say in the Chumash, but Rashi says, in the second source, Rashi right there, says, Parakof plus a column, kolo eda, eda hashlema, the full eda, why shekvar mesu, mesu midbar, v'elu parshu l'chaim. All the Mesei Midbar, the generation of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, had all died out. In other words, this event is taking place now in the 40th year. Very little information. It's fascinating. In one set, you're in Chukas, really. That's questionable. We're going to discuss when the Maaseh of Korach happened. But Lemaisa, in terms of the simple reading of the Torah, we jumped to the end of the 40 years, just like that. You have the discussions in the previous schedule were kind of like they're ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Then you had the Meraglim, and now you jump. What happened was intervening 38 years. They were in the second year, so intervening 38 years. So what exactly happened? Not really that much, so nothing we know about. Okay, in fact, the Torah says later in the third source, in Devarim Parak Beis, Pasuk Tezayim, Vayikasher Tamu Kalan Shamil Chamal Amos Mikarev Am, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayidabar Shalavai Leimor. So Rashi puts the psukim together over there in Devarim, by the bear, and so on. It says, "Lamedcha shekol lamed ches shana shayusom nizufim lo nisyachrim adibur." Okay, Hakadosh Baruch Hu did not speak with Moshe Rabbeinu in the usual fashion for 38 years. That's what it looks like, because the whole reason that Rashi says Hakadosh Baruch Hu communicated with Moshe was on behalf of Klal Yisrael, right? The Shul Yisrael. So now all those 38 years, so bang, 38 years disappear really very, very quickly, and all the Mesei Midbar died out. What happened to them? Where they die? When they die? The Torah doesn't say any information. This we know from this pasuk in our sedra. Vayavo kol b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edah. That says at this point all the Mesei Midbar died out. So actually, the Torah never tells us what exactly happened. Even the Mishnah, the Gemara doesn't describe. However, there is a famous Mishnah in Tainis on Daf Chav Vav Medbeis. It's a long Mishnah. It starts on Amud Aleph and goes on to the next page. There we find a well-known statement, Amar Shun Gamliel, Lohayam Tovim Yisrael Kachamishol Sabra Av V'Chama Kippurim. We all know the two great festive days on the Jewish calendar, Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. And the Mishnah goes on. You all know that that's the days the girls dressed in certain clothing and so on. That was the Wayu Kinetz day, right? It was the Shidduch day, whatever, Soyot Sinai, whatever the organization is. That was the day everybody met, right? So the Gemara asks, on Daf Lamed, Amud Beis, the Gemara asks, we understand Yom Kippur was a joyous day. It's funny, we don't see Yom Kippur that way necessarily, but in the olden days when they had in the Beis HaMikdash and the times when the red thread, the crimson thread turned white, they knew they were forgiven. So what greater simcha is there than that? We remember from Musaf, right? The Kohen Gadol, he came out alive. Well, made a party. It's a Yom Tovayos, the Kohen Gadol, right? So anyway, but it was a day of happiness. So we understand Yom Kippur, it's Mechilas Avonos. But what in the world happened on Tu B'Av? What was the 15th of Av all about? So Gemara has several different possibilities of what happened. One of them is, in the sixth source, on Laman of Beis and Tainis, Amar Rav Rechan of Yechanan, Yom Shekalu Bo Meisei Midbar. That was the day when the end of that Meisei Midbar was done. That was the end. No one else died from that generation. The whole generation, or most of the generation, we've seen in the second, died out. That was the day. It was the 15th of Av. That's what the Gemara says. And then the Gemara quotes that Pasuk in Dvarim, because all the time, while the Meisei Midbar was still, or while the Meisei Midbar was still alive, before they were Meisei Midbar, the Dibur, Achelo Kolo Meisei Midbar, Lo Heard Dibur Moshe, now Hashem spoke them. So Rashi there in Tainus, in the seventh source, Lamed Aleph Beis, Shekolo Meisei Midbar, tells a story. So in Medrash, that's in Medrash Eicha, Tosus quotes it, the Rishonim discuss it. What happens? So, I mean, we've all heard this, I think, Tisha B'Av time, right? The Tanya, Kol Arboim Shanja Midbar, B'chol Erev Tisha B'Av, Hoya Achruz Yotzev Omer Tzulach Por. On every year, Erev Tisha B'Av, the 8th of Av, you know that the story of the Meraglim, the rebellion, happened on Tisha B'Av, Chazal tell us, right? The Gemara figures it out and so on, so we know that there are several things. We associate Tisha B'Av with the Churban correctly. However, that wasn't the only thing that happened on Tisha B'Av. The Gemara has several things in that terrible tragedies. And the first was that was the day that the Meraglim, you know, delivered their report, or maybe they delivered the report just before, and that was they rebelled, Rashi Tosfos. But anyway, and that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Atem b'chisim b'chir shochinam. You cried now over nothing on this day, like a parent tells a child, you don't stop kvetching, I'm going to give you something to cry about in a minute. Right? That's how you tell the kid, right? So that's what Kodesh Baruch Hu said, oh, you're crying on this day, the ninth of Av, for nothing? Now I'm going to give you a patch. You're going to get something on the ninth of Av that'll be worthy of crying over. That's a korban.
That's
anyway, so that was Tisha. So look what it says here in this Rashi, in the Medrash Eicha. I would actually go ahead. And they would dig their own graves. Every Erev Tisha B'Av, all the Yotzei Mitzrayim of that generation were supposed to die out, would dig a grave. Everyone who died, well, they didn't get up the next morning, so they covered it up. The rest of the people alive hopped out and wait for next year. Right? So that's what it says. They would go with Yoshenbo, Shema Yomus, etc. And the next day, Yibadlo Achayim and Amesim, the announcement came out, everyone who's living comes out. So everyone would come out, and you'll read the Rashi, very interesting. The 40th year they did it, right? Because there's still some people left. They didn't all die in one shot. They just now, that Tisha B'Av they got in. And they got out the next morning, everybody was still alive. Nobody had died. So how could that be? So they figured, you know, maybe we made a mistake in the Luach. Maybe it wasn't the ninth of all. Maybe they made a mistake with the Shrod. So they did it the next night. And the next night. By the time it came to the 15th, they see the moon is full. They realize, not the ninth anymore, you can tell, it's a full moon. And they realize that the Gzera was canceled, right? In other words, Gzera Nishlamu, those people were spared the decree. So, Kavlo Sador, Lo Sayyum Yamtu. Fine. So that's the Mason Midbar. All right. What does anything to do with anything we're talking about? So we know the whole Midbar door died out, and we don't know what became of them. They're buried somewhere there in the desert. Every Tisha B'Av, the people were buried. So there's a fascinating story in the Gemara in Baba Basra Daf Ayin Gimel Beis, going over to Ayin Dalam and Aleph. The Gemara says, Amar Abba Bar Barchana. This is a fascinating collection of fantastic tales related to Rabba Bar Barchana. About, I don't know, 15 or 20 stories the Gemara has, closer to 20 stories of things that happened to Rabbi Barbar Chana. Some of them are fantastic, that he traveled to strange places, saw strange things. Sometimes they're called the guzmos of Rabbi Barbar Chana, exaggerated stories and so on, unusual stories. So the whole question, are they meant to be taken literally? They're not meant to be taken literally.
The
Marashua,
whole book of the Gaon.
Right, the Vilna Gaon wrote a sefer called Perish Al Kama Agados, which was Rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Sor, Baron Feldman, wrote a book in English, which was published, Juggling the Juggler and the King, right, on those stories and some other goddess and chas, interesting stories. The Maharal in Prague has one approach to these stories, and the Maharal has a different approach, whether they take it literally or not. Anyway, one of the stories is as follows. Amar Rav Chana writes, Amar Rav Chana zimna chana v'ka zimna min bar is once traveling in the desert, and v'slavi ba'adon ahu taya, certain taya means like a nomad, an Arab, whatever, a goy, who was a desert, an expert living in the desert, a nomad, was with us. He could tell by the sand, the dust on the ground, which way it had to go. Somehow he knew, could figure out, and they would ask, how far are we from the next water source? So they say, bring me some offer. And he would tell him, Tommy parcel, 8 parcels away. He could tell somehow from the sand, from the soil, whatever it is there, he was able to tell how far it was. And it says, skip a few lines. It says, Ivchas Leva, Chilut Leva, Rashi writes, Hapchinam, Rashbam, there's no Rashi on that point in Baba Basra, and his Ein Gimel Beis, Source 9, Rashbam says, I mixed it up. High opera, Baha'i opera, and so-so. I switched the sand to see if he still could figure it out. It still worked. He always knew how to do it. So he's a bookie with this. Anyway, then in the last line of the first paragraph, the end of Ayin Gimel Beis, Omar Ali, To Achri Lecha Meisei Midbar. Let me show you where the Meisei Midbar are buried. I know where there are Meisei Midbar. Somehow this guy, this Arab, knew where at least some of the people from the Meisei Midbar were buried. That's what coming back to our point. They died in the years, like we just said in the Har Seder, and it says, Chazisina v'domu kemande mitzi v'gano aprakid. He said, when I saw them, their faces still shone. That's what Rashbam says at the top of Ayin Dalam Adar, Swiss 10. So show them the pun in Tzuhubos. Then the Gemara tells a story. They were on the hill, and he flew in with, you know, with the... They were able to go under their legs, the whole story. Okay, but that's not relevant. There is more comments in the next page of Rishon Dvar, source number 11. He says that they similarly, their faces shone like they hadn't been dead for so many years, right? Now, Bo Lomar, Kilo Kasa Enam, Hayudomen Ke Adomiyayin. It looks like someone whose face is rosy when you drink a lot, you know, you get a rosy cheeks. They still look like that. Okay, even from a distance. Now, the story continues and goes back in the story. That Rabbi Barbachana Shakli Karno, he saw these Meisei Midbar, they had clothes on, so he cut off part of the clothes. Says the Rashbam in source 12, Shakli Karno Knaf HaTalis. They were wearing talis in a garment. It doesn't mean like a talis, though. We don't know that the talis means the garment, which had tzitzis on it. So he cut off the corner. Why? Lahavil Lifnei Chachamim. He wanted to bring it back as a souvenir to the Beis Medrash to show the other Chachamim. Lilmod, right, well, he sold on eBay, but he was bringing it back as a souvenir, right? Lilmod din tzitzis, ikibay shamik, we said, come on. We can learn from the Meisei Midbar. They got their Psak Halacha directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. Any fakus we have regarding tzitzis, he's going to bring us back to the Meisei. Here it is. I got this from the Meisei Midbar, my friend. Now we know how to paskin. That's what we wanted to bring it back. But then it says in the Gemara, Veloha Mistagilon, when they got back on animals to leave that place, it's like out of a, I don't know, some kind of a movie, right? They got back up on the animals couldn't move. They couldn't move. And so the Gemara says that the nomad, the Arab asked, Dilma Shaklis Mini Benai, did anybody take anything from here? That's why we can't move. That's what it says. We can't move because someone took something. If you took something, we got to put it back. So, okay? So Hadre, the Gemara, the man, the Shaklis Mini Benai, Lo Mistagilon. We have a tradition that, you know, take something here, you can't get rid of it. The Marashah explained, I printed in Source 13 of Chiddush HaGodes, the Marashah explains that they're Baba Basra, right? And I'm Daman Allah, the Shakum Minau, because their clothes were on them, right? Like it's a Simosa Lobo, some of the clothes grew with them. So anything that was part of them was part of that Tekriya Sherish Vati Biafi Mirona Munuchasi, right? Bidan Kagufan, you couldn't take anything. Fine. All right. Now, when it got back to the Beis Medrash, so the Gemara says, right? Ki also the Kamarabonon, Amalu called Abu Chama Rechol Bar Barachana Sichsa. The other Rabbanim cursed out to Rabbi Barachana. They called them names. They said, first they call him Rab Abba. That's just Rabba is short for Rab Abba, the Rashbam explained in 14. Right? Rabba Barachana and Rabbi Abba. Like Ravina is Rab Avina. Fine. They called him Chamra, Chamor donkey. Chomer Shota Kachamor. Okay? Or Sichsa, Shota. Right? You're foolish. Because, so you couldn't bring it back. Tell us what it looked like. Tell this guy. He forgot. He didn't count it. He didn't look at it himself. He just swiped the thing, and the guy said, put it back. He put it back. So he said to the other Rabbanim, said to Rabbanim, what's the matter with you? Said, did you look? He said, tell us what you saw. Lamai Hilchasor, right? Why did you want to take it? Because we have a machlokas. Rashbam explains the machlokas and menachas. How many strings are there on each corner of the beged? We pass is one of the rare cases we pass on Beis Shammai over Beis Hillel. We have like Beis Shammai, there are four strings doubled over, so a total of eight, right? That's Beis Shammai. But Beis Hillel says there are three for a total of six. So he said to Rabbi Chana, what, you have three or four? He didn't know. So they called him, you fool, you didn't have, they were very upset with him. Okay, no. So you see from that Gemara that archaeological evidence, so to speak, what he saw here, could influence determining what the halacha should be. That's what I brought out from there. As Yehuda said before, there's a famous machlokas regarding tefillin. It's summarized by the Torah in source 15, Arachan Milchus Tefillin, Siman Lamed Dalet. What's the order of the four parshas in tefillin? Famous machlokas, Rashi, and Rabbeinu Tam. Another sheet that's to it. Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam. Right? Rashi has, the order is, if you're facing the person wearing the tefillin, right? It's Kadesh. Start on the left, it's the Meniach, right. So looking at it, it's the Meniach, it's on the left, right, the order is Kadesh, V'hoya Kiviyacha, Shema, and V'hoya Shema. And when Tom switches, it says Kadesh, V'hoya Kiviyacha, and Shema. That's the famous Rashi Tzolom, Rabbeinu Tam Tzolom, fine. Oh, and the Shal Yad also. That's why some people put on both. Some Sfaradim put on both at the same time. See, sometimes by the Sfaradim and the Kosam Arabi, in other places they're actually wearing two pairs of tefillin at the same time. By the Chassidim, they put it on after Shachris or whatever, after Shemoneh Esrei or something. Anyway, most people, the Bach writes, Moses, I print on a page, the Bach, they write, Minag Olam Kiperish Rashi. Most people wear Rashi, it's on five. So the Prisha over there, it's not on the page, unfortunately. Prisha knows Dalit, but the Bach quotes it too, it's verse 16. Cross the last two lines. Cross of a smag by Mordechai, Shoshoch, Sabbath, Shenoflo, Bimashal, Kerry, Cheskel, Moses, from Tzil Nishonim. Keseda Haram and Rashi. They found it by the kever of Yecheskel Hanover. They found old tefillin. Something fell down. They found old tefillin, ancient tefillin over there. And it was the order of Rashi. So bang, there you go. Perfect proof. The Rashi is correct. The ancient tefillin they found in this archaeological site. Right? It wasn't exactly archaeological thing, but they found it there. That should be a proof. So the preacher says, no, other people said, that's no proof. That's why it was in the Geniza, the apostle. The halacha was the other way. It was put over there, it was buried with the Yecheskel, because, you know, the tefillin wrote in the wrong order. So no riot. Okay, and the Bach dismisses that. He thinks that's not a fair taina. Yesh dochen el fitzulin ha'ogonzum. That's why they were gone as them. The law in the here, he thinks it's not right. Okay, but again, what do you see, huh? Right, correct, yeah. So that's what he says. You know, could have just switched the order. That's the Bach says. He dismisses it. But whatever it is, the point is, again, you see, they're willing to entertain something they found, you know, an ancient site as something to help establish halacha. So,
but that was the actual case for the mitzvah, right?
And so, correct.
Was Reisman talking about actually finding?
No. Correct. I think not. I don't think he. Look, these are not obscure gemaras. He's well aware. It's not obscure. So he's well aware. I'm just saying. No one should misunderstand from what he said. I don't think he's well aware of these gemaras. I'm just pointing out that people should not think that we dismiss out of hand, anything that's extra Gemara, you know, outside the Gemara. These sources can be brought as to establish Metzias. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying Amen. These are not the Gemara. He's well aware of the Gemara.
Okay.
Something found there, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, also in terms of words, the Gemara in Megillah here, on Daf Yud Ches Aleph, in source 17, the Gemara in Megillah, says the Mishnah says there, Kara Seirugin Yotza. If you read the Megillah, step by step, in parts, so to speak. Right? And as you read the first five psukim, then you take a break. Then you read the next five psukim. And then you keep taking breaks in the middle, you yotze. But the Gemara says, lo havi yadar abon on my seirugin. It's an unusual word. What's meant by seirugin? So they didn't know what it was until they heard, Shamuela amsa de bei Rebbe, the maid in the house of Rebbe, said the word seirugin in a different context. And they go, oh, not at ease. What was the context? The Talmidim came to Rebbe, and they came in groups. Two guys came, and a few minutes later, another two guys came, another four guys came. I guess she had to keep opening the door. So she said, why do you keep coming? Right? Serugin. Why do you keep coming like that? Come together. I open the door once, everybody comes in. Right? That's probably what's going on. Or take everybody's coat, or whatever she had to do. So they learned what the word serugin means. And the Gemara has a few other examples there. Megillah Chesam and Aleph. They learned what a word means from the maid in Rebbe's house, or from the tire, from a goy. There was Shlach Yehovcha, Shlach Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcha. It's an unusual word. What does it mean? Then they saw the guy said, pick up your Yehovah, your pickle, your package of stuff. Right? So they learn these words. So again, I'm just showing that an archaeological evidence, it can't establish halacha, create psak, but it can support a psak or establish Messias. Okay, that's just, you know, by way of an important introduction. I mention this because we'll see that with the Tchelas, there is substantial evidence from archaeological digs and so on, that the Murex snail, this snail, was used for dyeing in ancient times. It doesn't prove it was used for tzitzis or for big day kuna. That's the other place we have chelas of a big day kuna. But, and that's an important point, as we'll see, the Chazal knew about it, and in their time, this stuff was available, and it was something that people knew about. So there is something to that. Regarding tzitzis, of course, we know, and then we come to the meat of the subject, really. Regarding tzitzis, we know the psukim in the Bamidbar Parak Tesvav, psukim lamed zayim, anuches, right in the third parasha of Shema, v'amei shalom asulam, darber b'ni yisom ha'talem, asulam tzitzah, kamper yidam, darasom asulam tzitzah, karam, psil techeles. What exactly is Tchelas? So actually, Tchelas, I just mentioned, is introduced in the Chumash, not here, in Parshas Shlach, but Tchelas actually is first mentioned back in Parshas Truma, in collecting the materials for the Mishkan, because Tchelas is one of the items needed for the Big Day Kahuna, and also for the coverings of certain vessels in the Mishkan when they travel, like the end of Parshas Bamidbar. So Rashi there in Parshas Truma, Perakof Hei Pasuk Dalet, Rashi is, what is Tchelas? Sever Tzavua Bedam Chilazon. It is wool that is dyed with the blood, and blood doesn't mean blood, but some liquid or extraction from a chila zone. That's what Rashi said. Then he says utzvo yorok, which is interesting. No. The color is green. However, no. Well, yorok in the Gemara Lashon doesn't have to mean green. It could mean blue, there's also in sukkah, but I don't go into that problem right now. The fact is, when you manufacture tcheles from the, I've seen it with my own eyes, from the murex dye, it turns green for a while before turning blue. But anyway, a different subject. But the point is that Rashi says it's semer, it's wool dyed from the tfilozon. The Rambam writes it both in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, Perakhes Halach Yud Gimel, Kol Mokom, every place the Torah says, the tcheles hamura b'chol mokom hi ha-tsemer ha-tzavua ke-etzem shamayim, the color of the sky. Whenever Torah speaks about tcheles, it's wool with wool, which is dyed in this color, right? Shupitoch min ha-kochol, it's a shade of the blue, right? Then he tells what other colors are, too. That's in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, Perakhes Halach Yud Gimel. In Hilchos Tzitzis, Perak Beis Halach Aleph, the Rambam writes, tcheles hamura b'tor b'chol mokom ha-tsemer ha-tzavua, and so on. V'zui d'mus ha-rakia, nirus ha-ayin ha-shemesh, v'tiaro sh-rakia. You know, sky blue, but what time of day? So he says, noontime, middle of the day, not the late in the day, right? The sky is blue, but it's different shades of blue, the different time of day. So the Rambam says, it doesn't look like it, no. Okay? But the Rambam writes, it's got to be the color, that's the tcheles, it has to be a fast dye that remains, it can't change, and so on. Again, we call that sky blue. That's what the Rambam says. So where do you get it from? So Rashi says it's chilazon. Where did Rashi know it from? That's a Tosefta Menachos, printed in 22, Perek Tes, Alach Avav. Tcheles ain't kshere ela min achilazon. Okay, that's what it says. Now, there's an opinion that's very shawl, that's a lav dafka, but we'll leave that out for now. That's what it says in the Tosefta Menachos. Got to be from the chilazon. So what exactly is the chilazon? Where is it? How do you find it? And so on and so forth. So, it appears, you asked the Rambam, how it appears from Midrashim, that I printed these three Midrashim, here, that already in the days of the Midrash it was rare, or even at some point, we don't know exactly when, it became unfindable. The Sifrei, in Parshas Habracha, in the Zvarim's Piskashin Nun Dalad, says, Rabbi Yossi, I was once going someplace, I found an old person, right, what do you make a living? Omer, let me chilozom. I get it, I'm in the chilozom business. That's available, you can find such a thing. And he says, I know there's a place by mountains and there's scorpions around there and you can't get in there without being bitten, you know, it's too dangerous to walk there and so on. Anyway, Amarti in the third line of 23, Niko Shu Shaganos with Sadikim Lasid Lovel. The Medrash says that the Talis is Ganuz, it's already been removed from usage. We'll worry about it. Lasid Lovel. The Midbar Rabbah as well. In Parsha Shlach Park, it's Zion that I have over there. I think it's, I don't know what Simon is, but I didn't write it there. Parsha Yud Zion, I think Simon, hey. It says, Achshav Ein Lanu Elo Lovon Shah Tcheles Nignaz. We don't have Tcheles anymore, we only have Lovon, that's why it's the string's only white. Now, but we don't have it anymore. Medrash Tanchuma, same thing, it's in Tes Vav and Parsha Shlach. Vassal and Tzitzis, also it has to be Tassav Lovon, also, like we know from Sukkah, the same din. Anyway, it says, Ein lo el lovon shatheles nignas, therefore mitzvah lovon. Fine. So, sometime in the days of the Medrash, already it was rare, it was considered to be nignas. When exactly that happened, I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. But somewhere along the line, it got lost. Okay? So that's why for the Rambam, apparently, and in many number of centuries, they are only white on the tzitzis, and that was the end of the
Medrash. Okay?
Yeah, so the question is it all? But you're right, it appears already in some time, it was already rare. Okay, when exactly, which parts of the Medrash were written, so I don't want to go into that now. But anyway, it certainly at one point it was already less and less available. Okay, and it was also very expensive, maybe that's what it was referring to. But we know, historically, at least a number of centuries, there was no tcheles on anybody's tzitzis. So what happened? So in the late 1880s, there was a Chassidish Rebbe, from Gershon Henoch Leiner, known as the Radziner Rebbe. And Radziner Rebbe was a Tanach Chacham, Otzim, and also a genius of a man. He was self-educated, he didn't go to college, okay, but he studied science and other things. And the Radziner Rebbe took it upon himself to search for the chilozon. He felt time to get ready. It was going to be the Beis HaMikdash soon, so he better be ready before there was Machon HaMikdash in the old city, right? He's going to get it ready now. And we need tcheles for the big day kahuna, so let's get... So he looked up, and he looked into an exam of science, and he traveled to Italy. And in Italy, he saw, went to an aquarium to look to study different types of fish. He spoke with chemists. Anyway, he wrote a number of pamphlets, which now put together in one work that I brought with me here, called the Sefer HaTcheles and the Radziner Rebbe. He has a mimer called Mimer Sunei Kmunei Chol on this subject, another one called Pesul Tcheles, another one Ein HaTcheles. Anyway, there's a whole Sefer, they now printed everything from new. And he came to the conclusion, based on his evidence, he met with a chemist and so on, that I've rediscovered the chilazon. He said it's a species called the cuttlefish, which is a kind of squid. That was the conclusion of the Zina Rebbe. The problem was that the stuff that comes out of the squid is black, but he worked with his chemist and showed him, he'd do this, and he put this and this together, it's able to turn blue. Okay, the Radzina Rebbe went back to Europe. The Rebbe said, all the Radzina Hasidim put on tchelas on their talis, certain breast livers, and if we've seen Eretz Yisrael today, more than 20 years ago, before the new tchelas, you can see Radzina Hasidim wear tchelas on their talisim, you can see it today, and many breast livers have followed as well. That's from the Radzina. It's basically the color, I think, is technically called Prussian blue, kind of bright blue, and it's available for those people who follow practice. Fast forward now about the 25 or so years, Rav Yitzhak Isaac Alevi Herzog, okay, who was the first Rav HaRashi of the state of Israel. Rav Kook was the first Rav HaRashi, but Rav Kook died before the state was established. So when the Herzog succeeded Rav Kook, also a genius, Talmud Chacham, but also very knowledgeable in science and things. He was originally from Ireland. And he got his doctorate from the University of Dublin in Ireland, and his doctoral dissertation, which I have here, was called Hebrew Porphyrology. It's a study of the royal purple and the biblical argaman and tchelas. And he knows the science, the whole essay here, which they republished, you know, with other stuff, and you can take a look at it. So Rav Herzog studied, and he felt that the Radzina Rebbe was not correct, that is not, in fact, the actual tchelas, and he demonstrated scientifically that he was, in effect, tricked by this chemist, Radzina Rebbe was, because he said you could take anything and add what the chemist said to add on the turn of blue. It's got nothing to do with the fish. The stuff that came out of the cuttlefish wasn't the thing. Okay, the Radzina Rebbe followed the Rebbe. That's it. The Herzog disagreed. The Herzog disagreed for other reasons, which I'm not going to tonight. But the Herzog disagreed on, he said, the Herzog didn't say necessarily wrong. He just said we don't have the Masorah and so on. It's another issue. And it's two versions of what the Beis HaLevi said. They're printed in the Radzina's farm. It prints the response of Abba Gedolim. And Rav Shechter quotes from a Salamachi, a different approach. Anyway, it's printed in Nefesh HaRav. Anyway, but be that as it may, Rav Herzog disagreed. What's interesting is that Rav Herzog did a lot of testing work in a laboratory and so on and came up with a different creature. He was aware of the Murex, but he was dissatisfied with it for a couple of interesting technical reasons. Okay, which I'll get to in a second. What's ironic is that Rav Herzog, by the time Rav Herzog was going into this, Radzina Rebbe was already dead. But he corresponded with the dye makers from Radzin and worked with them, and he got all their literature and so on. What's ironic, twist of history, so to speak, was that after the Holocaust, when the Radzina community was wiped out, to those people who escaped, say, after the war, they reconstituted their community in Eretz Yisrael. But they had lost, obviously, all their factories and everything was destroyed. And they didn't, you know, I guess the people who survived were not from the dye makers. They didn't know how to do it in accordance with their tradition anymore. But Rav Herzog had the letters. Rav Herzog lived in Eretz Yisrael. He had the letters that he had exchanged before the war with the dye makers from Radin. So he's responsible for upslugging them from the point of view of halacha, but for maintaining the practice from the practical point of view because he had their materials. So they said that Rav Herzog has a lot of titles, but our Rebbe's our Rebbe. So they follow us. That's why we still have Radzina Chassidim today. So wearing an Eretz Yisrael. Right. Anyway, what did Rav Herzog sort of Herzog felt? He proposed something called the Janthine, a different type of creature. He knew about the Murex. He talks about it. His problem with the Murex were a couple of things that didn't seem to stim right. The color just wasn't blue. Okay, what they discovered later, more recently, was that when you do it outside in sunlight, Rav Herzog did it in a lab. He did it under lab conditions. In sunlight, it makes it turn the right blue. He didn't know that because he did it in the laboratory. The other thing he didn't know, because the Gemara says that the tchelas, that the creature, the chilazon, is doma layam. And these snails don't look anything like the yam, like the sea. However, the yam can also mean the seabed. And the Herzog did not go to the bottom of the ocean. Okay. However, the reason my brother-in-law got involved in this whole tchelas project, just an irony also, he was, there was a rabbi, an old rabbi, not old rabbi, an old, old-time Yerushalmi family, Reliot Tevger. He's not old himself, but his family, I think, is Yerushalmi, I think, several generations. He got into this project and apparently put an advertisement. He wanted people to go scuba diving to get some of these snails off the coast. And they put an ad in the paper. Anyone knows scuba diving, you know? So happens my brother-in-law had taken scuba diving as his gym requirement in Colombia. So he signed up for this expedition, so to speak, here, a couple of friends of his, and that's how he got involved. So he says, you go down, and they know, if you go to the seabed, these mesh in very well. So it could be Dom Eliam. Rav Herzog did not go scuba diving, it's clear. So therefore, there are a number of other things. Again, my brother published a little pamphlet, he wrote a number of articles, in the meaning of Tehillat. He lists the objections that Rav Herzog had to the Murex. Anyway, that's where, these are available, I can get online. Anyway, that's the background. But that's in terms of the... you know, of the Metzias of the Chilah zone. So the question again, as Verizon deals with, what is the story with this Murex? Is it acceptable or not? So he goes through a number of Gemaras, which I'll try and go through now. Number 26 is a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Chav Vav and Aleph, which Verizon admits would be a proof toward the Murex. Why? Because the Gemara says over there that Umidala, Pasuk Yirmiyah, Umidala Sa'ar teacher in the Vizradan Rava Tabachim Lekromel Yogvin. He left certain, the Vizradan was the chief general of, Rashi explains, Vizradan was the chief general of Nebuchadnezzar, right? So he left Umidala Sa'ar, some of the, you know, remnant of Jews, for the purpose of serving as Lekromel Yogvin, Kormim Yogvin, Kormim Tanav Yosef Elu Melakne Afarsom Ein Gedi. Right, they would get certain products from Ein Gedi. What are Yogvim? Elu Tzaydei Chilozon, the people who would hunt and trap the Chilozon, Misumo Shel Tzur Bar Haifa, from Sumei Tzur, that's Tyre, okay, to Haifa, that's the northeastern Mediterranean coast of Eretz Yisrael. That is exactly where the Murex are found. You can go there today. Okay, happens to be that today, you can't keep the Murex that you find off the coast of Eretz Yisrael because they're a protected species. Under the Chevra LaHaganat HaTeva, that's I guess the Israeli equivalent of the ASPCA, or the Environmental Organization, whatever it is. So the ASPCA is animals. So whatever the equivalent is for this is an animal. So I don't know. Whatever it is, you're not allowed to keep them off the coast of Eretz Yisrael. But that's where they're found, exactly like this Gemara says. So why did they want Jews to do this? The Buzrad did not leave these few Jews alive to go hunting Chilzonos for Titzis. But Rashi says over there in Shabbos, Chalfov and Aleph, Liyogum, it says, Hinicham Nebuzradan Lulavusha HaMelech. To make royal garments. That's what they call the royal purple and biblical blue. These dyes from these snails were used for royal garments, expensive. So the higher class, nobility, the kings, would wear garments dyed, and most people wore plain white garments, cheap. But the higher ranking people had stripes, you know, you already stripes, right? Even today. Stripes are indicative of, that's why we have stripes on our talus, by the way. Okay, but the stripes are the sign of the nobility and so on. But anyway, so that Gemara stims nicely with the identifying Murex and Chilozon, because it's in the right location. However, the next Gemara.
Even though the sign of Abdul.
That's a different part, right. Well, that's, okay. Anyway. Right, Chos Moshe. Anyway. There's another Gemara. Gemara in Shabbos, Ayin Dalam Rebbe, source 28, HaKosher Ramater. 39 Melachas of Shabbos, one of them is kosher, tying knots. Okay? So we all know the 39 Melachas are based upon what they did in the Mishkan, so the Gemara asks, like it does the other Melachas, where do we find that in the Mishkan? Right? That's the Gemara, Ayin Dalam Rebbe, in Shabbos. Right? Kosher Ramater, Kshir Mishkan, Hechava. Where was Kshir in the Mishkan? So the Gemara has a few different possibilities. At the end, it says, Elamar Rava, the Tamer of Elisha, came Tzadei Chilozon Kosher Numatirin. You need the chilozon, like I said before, to get the dye for the big day kahuna. So in order to trap the chilozon, you have to tie ropes together. What does it mean? So Rashi says, on 29, Rashi there in Shabbos, Ayin Dalam, Tzad HaChilozon, Litzmoa HaTcheles B'domo, right, to dip the tcheles, the wool into, you know, to get that color. He writes, could mean dog katan, by the way. Rashi, it's like a small fish, which is not a snail. We'll come back to that later. Well, says, Ola Achas, he's Mishana, that's based on a moment, I'll come back to later. But the more important Rashi for this point here is the next page, Kosun Matirin, Shekol Rishosos Asuyim Sharim Sharim. When you trap things in the water, what do you use? Nets. How do you make nets? You tie rope together, right? That's what Rashi says. So in order to trap the chilozon, whatever you're trapping in the water, you put in these rishasos, right? Nets. So the kasha is, wait a minute, these are snails. You don't need nets to catch snails. So Rav Reisman and others have pointed out, this Gemara would seem to indicate the chilozon is not the murex. You pick up a snail. Here's a snail. You don't have to have nets to catch them. And even if you can't get them, you know, what they do, like, for example, those you've seen off the coast of Maine on Cape Cod, other places like that, to catch things like lobsters and these things, they have like a box that they lower into, you know, a metal that they lower to the bottom and they leave it there. And eventually the animal comes and they pull it up. So it's not nets. So this Gemara would seem, Rabbi Reisman and others point out, this Gemara seems to indicate that the chilozon is not a murex, you don't need it. However, The fact is that one can answer. First of all, the Gemara doesn't say nets. So not necessarily a raya. The Gemara doesn't say in that. So Rashi says it. Rashi done other Rishonim say it, but it could be that in order to get the box in that way, how do you pull it up? Right, you got to fasten a rope to the box. The box can be made out of something not with kosher, but you know, to get it up and down, maybe that's how you use it. That's certainly a possibility.
It's got to okay. Be the
yeah, right. So and not only that, but my brother was showing me that Pliny the Elder, or in the Natural Histories, okay. Aristotle talks about the family. It doesn't mention nets, but Pliny the Elder is describing the snail catching industry in his time, you know, in the ancient times, says nets.
They use nets.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not going to riot from Pliny the Elder, but the fact is they use nets. Yeah.
The boxes, I think, because the lobsters would tear the.
Right, so that made out of stronger material.
Sales,
right, I don't make, right? Okay, so again, I don't think, as Yusuf just said, that's not necessarily the an eyes in a pina, but okay, it's one of the things, it's one of the things he says. Okay, a second point, another Gemara. Okay, this is in Shabbos, Ayin, Hayom, and Aleph. This is a stronger lie already. Okay, here, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hatzod, Chilozon, V'hapotzo, Eino Chai, V'lachas. What if a person traps the Chilozon on Shabbos? Tzitzis or not, they trap on Shabbos. Right, tzod is one of the malachas of Shabbos, and I'll trap and hunt on Shabbos, you know that? So a guy traps and says, Eno chayv el achas, you don't chayv shtayim. My chokas, whether it's under dish or not, okay, but some say dish is only dulekarka, the Gemara has the machokas, fine. What are you chayv, Eno chayv el achas? So look at Rashi in Source 31, Shabbos, ayin hey, amrav. So look at Rashi says, chayv el achas mishum tzeda. You're chayav for tzeda. If you trap a chilozon on Shabbos, you're chayav in tzeda. All right? Good. So what does that show? So there is a Gemara later in Shabbos, had a kuf vav medei, his important rule by tzeda. Tana banan. Hatzod tzvi, trying to catch a deer. The deer is sumo, he's blind, you can't see. Or he's yashin, you're chayav. But chiger means it's lame, right? Limping. You can't. Or it's zuckin, it's too old, or it's sick. Your putter. There's no din of tzad on something which is self nitzod. It's trapped already, right? What does trapping mean? What does tzad mean? You can do an act that contains it. But if it's already a sick old animal, it can't do it. So that's not called tzad. As I said there, that's the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Vav Medbeis. And it depends what it's sick from. Machmas Umtzina, right? Rashi says in Source 33 there again, Shabbos Kuf Vav Medbeis. What's Umtzina? Ayefus. Can't escape. Mitzod ve'omed hu. It's already self-trapped. It doesn't. So that's not called tzad. So again, so Revisman wanted to tie it. So snails. How hard is it to catch a snail? They move like a snail, right? They're very, you know, very slow, right? So that's not called tzad. You can pick it up here, right? It doesn't, you don't have to trap. You know, you trap fish that swim quickly. You can talk about trapping animals, but chilozon is indeed a murex snail. How do you apply tzad? That's the din. But that's the din of Shulchan Aruch. I printed it here. Some Shin Tes Zayin Arachaim Siv Beis. Right? Chiger Chola Potter. The Mishnah Berurah explained it. Ozak Hood in Cotton. It's Potter of Usser. Fine, but it's because it can't get away. It's not called trapping, and that's how the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chos was not on the pages, but in the Parakov Zayin. He quotes him from Zalman Arbach. Okay, Shamati Nagam from Zalman Arbach Shlita. The low also about Avachan Kaela and so on. For example, Masha Eno came ben Nemola, an ant. When they call it sawed by an ant, she ben Nekal Efshol Lekachto. You can catch it easy. It's not called trapping on Shabbos. Okay, Gamim Darkles Chabe. Even we can get away. It sometimes would hide. So therefore, you see that it might be other problems. Muksa might be other dinim, but it's not tzad. So they kind of, the Gemara talks about tzad chilozon. So chilozon is snail. That's not hard to catch. That's already a more powerful pina. However, perhaps a response may be, Source 36, the Mishnah Shabbos Kup Zion of Aleph. The Mishnah there says, the famous Mishnah, Shmona Shrotzen. On the end of Parsha Shmini, we find eight Shrotzen. Shrotzen are creeping, more like rodents or reptiles and so on, which have dinim of tumah. Shmona Shrotzen. So it says there in the, now what exactly are the Shmona Shrotzen? So the Torah lists them off by name. Achomet, Vatim Shemes. Look at Otsko. They transliterate. They're not taking sides. There are all kinds of shitas as to what each one of these is. Not so posher. Look in different versions. Otsko, and there I looked it up, they transliterated. But others are very, Kaplan, others, they give their suggestions. So first of all, One, according to some, one of the Shmona Shvatzim is a type of snail. And it says here in this Mishnah, Hatzadon Chayav. Right? That's what it says. And not only that, but it says in the Mishnah, Ushar Shkotzim Uramasim, other type things, if you're Tzadot Tzorah, Chayav, Rashi says, look in 37, Shar Shkotzim Uramasim could go Tolas. What's Tolas? It's a worm. They're not so fast moving either. Right? Worms are also easy to catch. So, the point is, whatever teretz you'll give for this Mishnah, the house Tzadot Poh, you can say the same teretz for your lesson. That's a little bit of a backdoor answer, but yeah.
Different with the Shmir Shabbos, that idea is that easy to catch,
where it's hard to say. So actually, I don't know. So I don't know. See,
that,
right. So in the Shulchan Shlomo, also where the Talmidim quoted this on that same siman, Sinta Zayin, in Arachaim. So he says, first he says, Lo rak barachan mitzuyim, elafilu keilu she'enu mitzuyim, kegon tzav. Now tzav may mean a toad or something like that. Im ein darcham levrochu v'nekal efshal echot bem, mistaber the rak mishu muktza osu l'tofsan. That's what he says. It's only a problem of muktzah. The lo mishum tzeda, because kimistaber shadirim kechol of zokin. You know, even though you're limiting their freedom, it's the same thing with ants and so on. He mentions that. And tzein mucha v'chagovim and so on. He quotes other things like that. But he does mention, he quotes a Rabbeinu Rucham. It's a Rishon. Right? Chacham echad heilish Rabbeinu Rucham. Quotes where it is, Kosov Mefurish, Ushar Shrotzim Gon Tolas, like that Rashi, Hatzoro Tzarchayev, Tzoro Tzarchayev, Tzoro Tzarchayev, Tolas, Havi Mamish Kinamala. So whatever Teretz you'll give. So again, maybe the definition of Mitzod is different by different creatures. I mean, I don't know.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, right, but here.
So it all depends how.
How it's normal.
And if you have to go scuba diving and put an ad in the newspaper, that's the minority.
So you're right. So I think you're right about that. And that's what I want to say. Because first of all, I quoted the Yerushalmi. It's in Shabbos Perek Zayin Halacha Beis in Source 38. And really, Tosus, in there on Shabbos, Ayin Hamanav quotes it. You just look at 39. Tosus says, Tzorchin the Yerushalmi mashma the tzorchi lozen lo mechayim mishum tzeda. You're not chayim al tzeda. Now, first of all, to me, that tells me that we saw already a few times the term tzorchi lozen. Just because they use the word, the Gemara used tzad or tzidei chilazon, doesn't mean that it's tzad for Shulchan Shabbos. It could still be called, the word tzad can mean catch. And it doesn't automatically mean that that's malacha. The same melacha of tzad on Shabbos. Like sometimes you can call something bishul, which won't necessarily be bishul for Shabbos. There's a difference between bishul b'tzachol and bishul b'shabbos. But again, that's not going to help us with the Bavli. But the Yerushalmi says, the Peyoshua comments, printed here, Peyoshua there in Shabbos, Ayin Hamad Aleph, on that Tosus, right, so he mentions sort of what you're saying. He says, it's different. When you hunt these chilos, what you do is, look at the third line, in came Efshalomar, the Lo Shaya Chach Milsa B'Tedis, he's trying to explain to you, Shalmi, why it's not Tzad, the Lo Shaya Chach Milsa B'Tedis, Chosh, Eno Motri Koko, Tzul B'Shas, Priest of Mamet. You don't catch it right away, right? It's not like you're sweeping. You put it down, it can be, I don't know how long till something comes into it. It's a different kind of Tzad. And what someone else wanted to mention, what you said, maybe the fact that you have to go into the water and get it out, that's definitely a possibility. It's hidden from you, so to speak. So, it's possible. And the truth of the matter is, maybe on land it's easy to find a snail when it's there, but on a turtle. Okay, on land, you can catch a turtle easy. Just pick it up. A 2-year-old can catch a turtle. Try catching a turtle in the water. They swim away fast. They're not so partial. So maybe it's different when you're doing it in their habitat as opposed to elsewhere. Just an aura. Again, it's an interesting title, but I'm not sure exactly, again, I don't see how you get from there that it's impossible for the New Yorks. I think you have a terrace. All right, another Gemara.
There are rice many dressings called to the question of the...
Yerushalmi?
Yeah.
No, he didn't mention. He didn't. I mean, I'm sure he's aware of Tosus quotes it, but, okay, he was going with the Bavli, which was fine. Another Gemara he quoted was the next thing on 41, Gemara on Hedron, Sadi Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says there, Ola Lahar, a strange story, whole story, V'ra shayom einbo, or alei lahar, rei shayom einbo ala chilozen echad, l'mocha yerdu gishom nismalei kulo chilzonos. So go up the mountain, you can find them during the day, there's one chilozen there. And then it'll rain, and the next day there'll be tons of them there. Okay? That would imply, sort of like worms, you know, after a big rainstorm, the worms come out. Why? Because the ground gets filled with water, right? So they can't breathe, they come out for a while, and then they go back in if it dries up. That's what it says about the chilzonos. Now, Rashi actually calls chilazon. It's an interesting point. On Daf Zad Aleph, source 42, Rashi calls chilazon tolas, sheyotzim and ayam. It comes out of the water. But the fact is, the Maharsham in the Tshuva, the Reisman quoted, that is a chelak hay simen lamed hay. Tzarek lomer the afsha ola bahar mikol mokom ein gidulo sham. They don't grump from there. The achar sheshoa sham ezes man who chozel vokom chiyusol. Then they go back to their habitat. The problem is that this Murex can't live out of water that long. They say they can only last a few hours out of water. To do what the Gemara here says, they go all up to a mountaintop and come back down. That's already a long trip. And that, you know, especially if you're moving at a snail's pace, literally. So you're not gonna get... So that's a problem with the Murex.
Well,
that could be
like a tsunami.
Mm-hmm. The water rushed it up there. Yeah, that's possible. That's interesting. That's a possibility. Okay, but it's interesting, the Yad Ramah there in Sanhedrin, the Yad Ramah of the Ramah, let me show him, not the Ramah with an Aleph and the Shulchan, but the Meir HaLevi, the Ramah, Yad Ramah in Sanhedrin, says that he thinks for other reasons the Chilazon being discussed in this Gemara is not the Chilazon of Talus. That's what he says. The second line of 44, the Mistabra, high Chilazon, lav heich dominin gabay Talus, whom he kama anpe, for a number of reasons. Now look at the last line and a half also. He says, on Mistabra, the high Chilazon, the hocha lav heich dominin gabay Talus. It's a mina akrina. So therefore, that's the case in Okashim Nakamar. Yad Ramah is a Rishon, but again, you don't have to learn like Ramah, but it's possibly a question. Another question they raise is source 45.
But it'll be against Rashi.
Looks like it'll be against Rashi, yes. But yeah, there is a Rishon, Yad Ramah is a Rishon, we have a Rishon that says that it's a different species, and no riot. Another Gemara is a Gemara in Menachos Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. It's problematical, because the Gemara says, Tanar Bono, Chilazon Zeh Gufo Domal Yom, I spoke about that before, and then it says, Ubriyasa Domal Dag. It's like a fish. A snail is not a fish. So if you take this Gemara literally, then it's not a fish. The problem is the second part of the Gemara says, Ola Echad.
What is a fish?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you look at the variety of fish that you have in the ocean,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. They are from one extreme to another.
Right. So the Vilna Gaon, which is not on the paper, going to have it. The Vilna Gaon is commentary on the Mishnah in Kalim, Perik Yud Halacha Mishnah Aleph, and Kalim the Eliyahu Rabba, printed in the regular Yochanan Bar's Mishnah that I have with me, he says, Shkol Shebayam Min Dago. Any marine creature, Chazal refers to as a dog, it doesn't have to be technically classified as a fish, the way we would call it, you know, a whale, we also would probably refer to, we know it's a mammal, but, you know, we consider it like a fish, right? So, the Vilna Gaon says this, Mefurish, the Gro writes that any time, any sea creature, a marine creature, is called a fish. So therefore, this would not necessarily be a raya. Also, again, the second part of the Gemara that comes up once every 70 years, no one knows exactly what that means. So that's another point. All right.
The water zone doesn't appear in the term as it
was. Right, exactly. But anyway, so there could be a dog. Also, the fact... Right. Exactly. It makes the color. The first zone might... Say that too, so I'm going to put it only on the carriage. But anyway, not for now. But the fact of the matter is, there seems to be evidence from elsewhere that it is a snail. I mean, even without the Vilna Gaon. So, for example, Yushalmi in 46, Shalmi in Shabbos, Parak Aleph, Aleph, Gimel, the Gemara says, Amr Shem Chavta, Lomi Chilazon, Shemano Chilazon, Yeshlo Gidin, Vatsamos. Does Chilazon have bones? It doesn't. In other words, it's a boneless invertebrate. That's what we call it in science. A fish does have bones. I mean, the Yushalmi says, questions. Chilazon the actual dog with Gidim and Tzamas? Certainly not. It's passes from that Yushalmi, that it's a boneless invertebrate, like a snail is.
Yeah,
okay?
Called it a
right, maybe. Like, that's a comparison to Warman and Hanami. Okay? Or in Shirashirim Rabbah, Medrash, says in Parsha Dalet in Shirashirim Rabbah, it talks about what the clothes that the Jews wore all 40 years. Again, back to our Seder a little bit, right? And it says their clothes grew with them. Simlos holo balsam erecha, pasuk in Dvarim Perkes. Right? Their clothes grew with them. And look at the last line of 47. Amalei tzeo lamad mechilozim, shekol zman shu gadol nartiko, gadol, what's nartiko?
Shell.
It's shell. So you see from this measure, also it's up with a shell. So again, there seems to be a certain amount of evidence, or at least indications, that it is a snail, not a fish, that Gemara notwithstanding. Also, this is the Rav Yoh in Simchot Hei. Rav Yoh, the commentator, is talking about another place Tchelas comes up in the Mishnayos, nothing to do with Tzitzis or Big Day Kahuna, but the earliest time to say Kriya Shema. Remember, we can distinguish between colors. Mishayakir. We always call it Mishayakir, but we forget the second part of it. Mishayakir of what? Oh, what time is Mishayakir? Okay, well, Mishayakir of what? So there are different opinions of Mishayakir of what. But anyway, one of them is it talks about between the Tchelis and Kaiser, you blue and green, or a marine color. Anyway, Garcia Mishalmi says Mishalmi we don't have, it says the Rav Yoh, but Tchelis and Kaiser being purpurim, or being pripinin, which are different types, and they call them the Laz purpura, which is Tchelis. Okay, that's the Gemara identifies that as Tchelis purpura, and that is the Latin word for Murex snail. Okay, again, I'm not, I rise this point from before, but we saw that Gemara in Megillah where you learn from what people call things, so we can learn what people call things here. Another Gemara, and here is really a very main arguing point, not just that Rav Eisenschlick brought up, but that others bring up also, the Gemara in Bava Metzi. And there's a problem, either it's a strong question or it's a strong raya. You can come down either side you like. Gemara in Bava Metzi. We know that in the end of the parasha of Kriya Shema, it says, "Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hotzeitzi Mitzrayim Eretz Mitzrayim." And a few places in the Torah it says that. So the Gemara asks, "How come Amar Rav Lama LeDechos Rachmani Yitzis Mitzrayim BeRibbis?" He says, "I'm Gabi Tzitzis, I'm Gabi Mishkolos by ways." Why sometimes the Torah says, "Ani Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim"? When you're talking about Pesach, it makes sense. When you're talking about certain mitzvahs, why is it stuck in? So the Gemara says in all these cases, a famous Gemara, right? I am a Kaddish Baruch Hu. I distinguished between, in Mitzrayim, between the Jewish Bechor and the Egyptian Bechor. So I'm going to distinguish between somebody who, when he does the weights in his store, he puts a few grains of salt on the thing so it comes down. You buy meat, but he puts a piece of salt so the weight comes down, so that charges you extra, and so I'll be able to tell it. And one of the things I'll be able to tell, the last line of 49, a guy who puts on tzitzis and he dyes the strings with something called kala ilan. What does Rashi say? Kala ilan, next source, kala ilan, tseva adoma l'tcheles. It's a color, it's like tcheles. And Rachmana Amar Psil Tcheles, Tcheles Amikam Shatuudam Chilazom. And we had, that's a Tosefta I showed you earlier, it's got to come from the Chilazom. The Kala Elon is a plant derivative, Elon, right, a tree, it's a plant derivative which produces a similar color. The Nemuke Yosef, there in Bavitsiyah, Daf Lamed Dalal and Alf in the pages of the Rift, writes, Elon Indi, Velaz Zechem Presh Barak Indiki, Indigo, in English, right, which is a color, indigo, which is a plant derivative. Apparently, indigo, so Chazal, apparently couldn't tell the difference between indigo and Tcheles by looking at it. So Kodesh Baruch Hu said, but I know the difference. I know who's going to get out the cheap way. He's going to dye his tcheles, his tzitzis with indigo. And so what's the idea? What's the time? Well, the fact of the matter is they discovered that murex dye, this snail, and indigo have the exact same molecular structure. So therefore, first of all, Rav Reisman said, so why would kings and royalty and so on and so forth spend money on buying dye from an expensive dye from a snail if this is the right thing? When you can get the indigo for cheaper. Now, that's not such a good... Right. Oh, well, we'll see. But that's a problem. It's molecular identical. We'll see that in a second. But even without that, what do you mean? You know, you want to get custom jewel, you want to get regular jewel. I can't tell the difference.
That's one,
right?
That's one argument I didn't understand.
Yeah, right. You can't. You got it because you're a king and you want to wear the authentic, the real stuff.
You can spend $10,000 on Madison Avenue and you can go...
Right. You go to another store and get it for half the price. Exactly, right? So that's not such a strong time. People may want to show up. Also, my brother-in-law pointed out to me, historically it appears that indigo came later to the Middle East. That it was not a plant that's indigenous to that area, and therefore the reason they did it is because they didn't have the indigo. Maybe they had, you know, maybe some of the kings would have been cheaper, but they don't have it in there. But there's something else as well, and that is the...
But the argument is not that. The argument is what
it's right, correct. Right, but the thing is, so the indigo, but indigo is the same... As I say, it has the same molecular properties, so then how do you tell them apart? Well, you could argue Anachanami. That's exactly what the Gemara says. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can tell them apart, but you can't. Anachanami, right? That would be a riot that it's the same thing, that the Murex dye is the correct dye, precisely because the Gemara says you can't tell them apart. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell them apart. The only thing is, at the Gemara Menachos, the next page, Membeis and Abeis, and tells us that there is a means of testing. You can test and distinguish through certain tests. The Gemara has a whole recipe here, how to test. You mix it with this and that, and you can tell the difference. And what will end up happening, Yitzchak said before, in the first panel, actually, Membeis going over Mem Gimel and Aleph. So Mem Gimel and Aleph part says, Ifrid Chazusei Psuli, you can remove the color. It's not fast. Indigo comes out. See, that was the problem, because you had these merchants who would come and sell, I'm selling you tailors. So you bought, you thought it was authentic tailors. And you bought it for cheap, and a great deal, I got a great deal on my tailors. Then they put it in the wash, and it all came out. Meanwhile, the merchant, he's long gone, you know, he moved on to Mexico.
That's what happened if you buy a watch.
Exactly, right, sleep. Right, exactly, but he kept it back when it stops that afternoon, got taken to the cleaners, exactly. Anyway, so the Gemara has the, so that's what Rashi explains, Nifr Chazus and Iskalka Amar Psul de Kala Ilanu. And tailors is very fast. Tailors, the Murex dye happens to be one of the fastest fast means it clings die that we know. But anyway, the Rambam also in the Chutzitza Perek Beis Halacha quotes that whole test. So the test seems to show there is a difference, and we know today molecularly there is no difference. How could it be? So that's an Eisen Taina. That's a strong Taina. So again, you could argue Enochanami. We can't tell the difference. The Chazal can. I had to have these tests. So look, the fact is they do know that even though the color itself might be molecularly identical, but there are differences scientifically. When you get something out of a plant, you get something out of an organism, you know, certain side particles, what they call, you know, in the DNA or the CSI things, trace elements. They have like trace elements from other things which will be different. So maybe the test tested for the trace elements, or maybe the test, huh?
Can we try the test?
Yeah, they've done all this. Yeah, they've done all these tests. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, they're both tests, right? For these tests. But maybe, you know, maybe there are... Okay, but it is a Taina. However, one could argue, actually, the exact opposite. Why? Because if Murex is... Again, this is a Kasha, but you could turn it around and bring it as a Raya. Why? Because if Murex and Indigo Ataka, Murex dye and Indigo Ataka identical, and the Gemara warned against using an indigo, so she should have warned against using the Murex also. Now, if the Gemara says, I'm a Kaddish Baruch, I'll tell you, don't use indigo, because that's not right, and it's something else, the Gemara should have said, don't use this either, if it's the same color. And especially, and you can't say that they didn't know about it, because that we have archaeological evidence that these snails weren't known about in the days of Chazal. We have, you know, in Phoenicia, in these places, it was the main dyeing industry, like we saw in the Gemara at the beginning, off the coast of Haifa and so on. So that's an interesting way to look at this. Okay, just a couple of other things quickly. Another problem, the Gemara says, how do you make the tailors? How do you do it once you get the dye out? So the Gemara Menachos Membeis and Beis says what you do, and gives a little recipe here. So again, Rav Eisman pointed out at Taina that if it's such a pivotal thing, like I said before, it has to be in sunlight, so why didn't it say that? The Gemara should have said it's got
to
be in sunlight.
Okay.
So, that's not what the Pasha of the Teretz. There was a Diragur, that's how he did it. That dimension, that's how he did it. They have lambs. Okay? And plus, add to the fact that I can tell you some personal experience, it smells terrible. Mm-hmm. It stinks. Okay? For a while, my brother-in-law, when he first got in the thing, they were doing it, you know, on the roof of the house in the front. Until my sister said, I'm gone. The whole house stinks. Got to get a factory to do this in. But the truth of the matter, I think, like Yehuda said, you know, that's the nicer way they did it.
It's okay. Called porphyria.
Was that right? It comes from the...
It's called porphyria. Well,
rotten fish.
You have a lot of pain, and you have no other indication, but the component of breakdown of the bilirubin,
liver,
which goes to the urine. And this was found by an unbelievable coincidence.
Uh-huh.
Well, a professor in the middle of the round gave a sample of urine to the resident, the student, go and check it. And just in order to do it later, continue the round, he put it on the window.
Oh, turned.
And he came back and he thought, wow.
Turned colors.
And that's what happened.
There it is.
And nobody knew about it.
They found this also out by accident. Anyway, a lot of interesting. But that's not also... Not everything, even this Gemara, and the Rambam also mentions the recipe in Perek Beis and Chutzitza Halacha Beis, but it doesn't have everything. Not every fact is in the recipe. It's giving general, just says Salamonim, doesn't tell you exactly. And also, the Rambam told me, Lamaisa, they discovered that it can be done without sunlight too. If you steam it a certain way, he said it can be done. So maybe that's why it's not mentioned. So I don't know if that's the strongest Taina. Another Taina that they have is the Rambam, and if you take a look in 57, the Rambam says, in the second line, because we're running low on time, it says, Domo Shachor Kidyo. And that's not true of the Murex. It isn't. It's not dark. And then Moshe Feinstein and the Tshuva talk about something else entirely. That the Rav Eisman brought this of Moshe down. Igus Moshe Yordecha, like based in Kufalam and Gimel. I printed it on page 58. So he says Rav Moshe also held like that. The only thing is Moshe was probably going with the Rambam. So I don't know if the Raya is based on the Rambam. It's dark. Now the truth is, could be the Shitza Rambam that this wouldn't work. Because the other Rishonim don't say anything about dark. They say blue.
There's no Gemara.
There's no Gemara, right. There's not a Gemara line. And the other Rishonim before say blue. Right, the Rashi tells another Rishon. So the Rambam said Shachor, but okay, so it could be the Rambam when it comes out, it's actually lightish color; it's not dark. But my brother did point out as soon as you apply it to the powder, you make it into this powdery stuff. It is very dark; it's a very deep dark purple. So maybe that's it. That could be. But I think I acknowledge it would be a little bit shrier according to the Rambam. Finally, the last thing that he brought. Well, let's finish the 1-2 list. I'm sorry if we're going a little over. But the last thing the Revisor mentioned was a Gemara Megillah Daf Vav Mud Aleph. Because it says over there, the Gemara tells it outside to save some time. The Gemara says that Zvulun, Shevet Zvulun, complained about their lot in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't like where they, you know, the three keys in real estate is location, location, location. They didn't like their location. Right? They said other tribes got better stuff. So Kosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry, everyone's going to need you because you're going to have the chilazon. Everyone's going to have to come to do great business. Okay? Now, based on that, most people assume that Zvulun lived on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. That's what the average person thinks. However, if you look and say for Yoshua, it seems not so. They lived by the Kinneret and so on. So it's all kinds of, how do you, in the psukim, it's a lot of, it's a problem. It's well beyond what I'm going to tonight. Could be that, I think the Vilna Gaon has a thing that they had a strip that extended to the Mediterranean, a small strip, others say, but it could be, and that's what some want to suggest, that, oh, they didn't live by the Mediterranean, but they, by profession, they were fishermen. They were in the fishing business. So they would travel, whether they had to travel. Right. How do you work out the psukim? But anyway, that's what he talks about here. So the taina is, the Reisman taina, but again, I think it was didn't think it was the strongest taina. He said, you can catch chilazon pretty easily. They have these trips off the Yorachov door. You can go in and catch them. They're protected species, like I said before, but you can catch them. You don't need fishermen. Well, it's true if you want to get a couple of them, but if you want to do it, in large quantities, you do need fishermen to go out. As a matter of fact, the way they get the tchelas now, just for your information, the way they get the snails now, they get them from Spain, where these snails are eaten as a delicacy by the goyim. Right? It's a big business. It's a big industry. You're getting these snails, and they eat clams and lobsters. They eat this, too, in Spain. So they have a deal. They don't care about the gland that secretes the tchelas. So they have a business arrangement with this group, this fishing company. So you do have fishermen that go out. I mean, that's the strongest time either. Just in terms of one other thing the Reisman did mention, there are three sheetas as to how many of the strings have to be, of the eight strings, how many have to be dyed. So you look, I print on the page, Rashi and Tosis, Menachos, Lamed, Ches, and Aleph, beginning of Parakat Tchelas, Rashi says, Mitzvah, Lasse, Tchelas, Beis, Chutin. Two out of the four, you fold it over, means four out of the eight. That's Rashi and Tosis, the same thing. Mitzvah says, Beis, Chutin, Tchelas, or Beis, Chutin, Lav, and Betzitzis. The Rambam says, one of the eight, which means half of the four. And that's why it's expensive to get a Rambam, because you got to dip only half of it in. Half of the four, double it over, one out of the eight. The Rambam disagrees, and he says, no, he says, it's got to be two out of the eight, one out of the four. So three sheetahs. How are we going to paskin? Right, that's what Reisman said. We don't know. So how do you know how much to put on? Even if you're convinced that it's the right thing, how do you know how to put on? Well, Rav Shekhar likes to point to a Shulchan Aruch, I printed on the whole thing, but Gardum, a person sits his Torah, and sitting Yud Beis or Chaim Sifalot, so he seems to be going with half and half. It goes by half. Okay, so he seems to say that's Rashi and Tosis. Even if not, Lamaisa Ashkenazim usually follow Rashi and Tosis, but that you have to figure out. So I just try to demonstrate that.
The problem is that if you do like Rashi and Tosis, you're not yourself under the Rambam.
Right, that's the issue. So that was one. That's the point. But okay, but we're
not yourself
at all. Right. I must tell you that Rabbi Tendler from why he wears Tchelas, his Mirax Tchelas. And he wears a sheet of the Rambam. And I asked him once, why do you wear a sheet of the Rambam? So he told me, because if the Mechab would have passed in the Shiloh, the Mechab would have passed in the Rambam, probably like he usually does. So I thought to myself, and the Ramah probably would have had the sheet of Rashi and Tosis. We're Ashkenaz. I didn't ask him that, but that's what a Shekhla holds. So, okay. Just a couple of quick things. So there are, in addition to, basically, I tried to show, I don't really see, with due covenant, and I spoke at the beginning, I have tremendous regard for Reisman. I just don't see that his arguments lead to the conclusion that there's a 0% chance.
Well, I think I'll give you the feeling he had the goal.
But I don't think so.
And
I
he went straight. To pull his
maybe I don't think so. He's an open person as far as I don't know him personally, but he's a very prominent Talmud Chacham, and I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think, when he is Daite, that all the things have Teirutz in them, and solid Teirutz in them. The Kashas too, I understand. I don't know that I'm convinced. The truth of the matter is, my brother-in-law years ago showed me the literature. I looked into the studies of myself, and I was pretty convinced that it's right. I can't say I was 100% convinced. I was convinced that it's probably the right thing. Initially, I didn't do it, because I told him that, look, it's very interesting, but my Rebbeim don't do it, so I'm not going to do it either. But then Rav Shachter did it, so he called me up immediately, and my brother-in-law said, now what's your Teirutz? So I was out of Teirutz himself.
But that was it.
Yeah, that's what he said, the expenses.
If I will put on, I agree. Right. But if I will put on.
That's what he said, it's in print.
Everybody will go back.
There's something similar in print, or a five column. Anyway, it's another discussion.
But the Briska also did not.
The Briska for a different reason. That's a basic for another discussion. Let me just finish up very quickly and put a couple more sources of print on the page, because there are some Gemaras that actually imply all the things we had cast in Teirutzim, but there are some other Gemaras which can be learned anyway to imply that it actually is the Murex, not to, besides what we mentioned. So, for example, the Gemara in the beginning of the Vilna Dalam and Beis, where the Gemara is the expression Tcheles Imrohu. That Tcheles, is on wool. And the fact is that a unique property, or almost, I don't know if it's fully unique, but a unique property of the Murex snail is that the dye clings or whatever it is, or is absorbed by wool, but not well by linen. It's interesting. Most dyes, it goes on whatever you put it on. This particular dye is fast on wool and it's not on linen. So that's, now Rashi, Rajan pointed out in a communication with my brother-in-law, after it was not in the shir, but he sent me a copy of the email. He said, if you look in Rashi, and he's right, Rashi seems to say, no, the Gemara entertains putting it on linen too, and it's only because we're posting Cheskel that we don't, but you don't have to read the Rashi. It could be Rashi telling you the Metzias. And if you look in Tosa, I printed here also, Tosa says, it may not be right, El HaEmes Omer, it's a fact. And it's a fact that it clings to this. And that's how the Rashi is Mashin and Tshuva also. So again, you know, that's a possible Gemara. And lastly, what? I think it does, but it probably also goes to Lin. You know, indigo, but I assume so. Okay? Also, there's a Gemara in Shabbos, which also fits in, and Rabbi Reisman's model to this also. The Murex has this property, because the Gemara there in Shabbos, Ayin Ahem and Aleph talks about when you crack it open to get the dye out, there's a question of Tilas Neshama, is it killing also? And the fact is, one of the Tchelis, look at the Rashi in the last source, Shadam HaChai told me Dam HaMeis. It should be either when it's still alive, you don't want to torture it, if you get the Tchelis out when it's freshly killed, it is better, and that's unique to the property of Murex.
Okay. Another reason would be down in the sun, because as soon as they killed it on the shore, they would take the thing right away and be in the sun.
Right, there would be inside, right, that's another riot to that. The last thing that Horizon did pine against, but again, it was not meant as a riot, just a cute thing. Every color on a spectrum has a certain measurement. It's called nanometers, the way it reflects. We all know colors reflect through a prism, right? The wavelength and so on and so forth. So my brother has it written up that you can look at it afterwards, right? So they discovered that, you know, non-Jews, obviously, they have a way of measuring. So it just so happens, it says in the Torah, Risen also is Chartanus Chomitz Hashem. You see, Tzitzis, you remember the Mitzvahs, we all know the Gematria, right? Tzitzis, it adds up to 600, sort of. They put an extra yud in the Torah doesn't have. Okay, Tosus figures it out. Okay, Tosus figures out what it means. But the Tzitzis is 608 strings and 5 knots, it's 613. Well, they discovered that the color of the Murex, the blue of the Murex dye, on the measurement of nanometers is 613 nanometers. Okay, not a riot. I have it over here. It's not a riot. You know, Reisman got upset about it because he said it was presented to him as a riot. That's not a riot because it's almost arbitrary. It's not totally arbitrary. Because meters is not an arbitrary figure. As opposed to, let's say, inches and feet, which are arbitrary, you know, measurements, meters relate to the distance from the equator to the North Pole, right? Well, I think every meter is 1/10 millionth, whatever it is, from the equator to the North Pole. So it's not quite random. But again, this is only meant as a, you know, some people get chizik from that kind of thing, some people don't. It's like gematria, some gematria, as my grandma said to me. Right. He said, you don't want to accept the this thing with the nanometers. I've heard gematrias that are less compelling, which people say in Stikl Torah. So anyway, all of this, Hayotzmi Dvareinu, certainly I think I respect. Obviously, people, no one has to do it. You follow your Rebbeim. And again, Rav Reisman is the Talmud Chacham of the first order, as I said at the beginning, and he has every right to conclude how he concluded. I think we've addressed some of the issues, and people should do. I think there's room, certainly, to indicate that it is the correct, that the Murex is, right, I know, I mentioned the Radzinas at the beginning. Okay, and the Radzinas continue to follow their Rebbe, and so on. So people should follow their own dark. Yeah, you've got the brighter blue than mine. So it's more of a Prussian blue, I think they call it. And the people should follow, and if you're interested in further, there's a lot of material, and only really, I'm so sorry for going over, really only scratch the surface, but it's a very, very fascinating subject. I've got a couple of Svarim here. I mean, Rav Tukachinsky, in the Sefer Yerach Kodesh HaMikdash, there's a whole section in the Chelek Hei, Perek Hei, about the B.J. Kuhnias, correspondence to the Herzog. You know, so Gedolei Olam dealt with this subject.
You don't know anything about the Khan.
The Murex, yeah. But here I have another book called The Chelek by a professor, Nachum Bush, with pictures in it, you know, like the Esther book. Can you take a look? Yeah, I have here. The newly printed edition. I have a couple old ones also, but it's printed over here. Anyway, interesting subject. And if you want to learn more about it, you can investigate yourself on websites and so on. But I think there's, it's all shver to.
How come the spelling is K?
That's I don't know the grammar of it, but they spell tekel it. To conclude that it's a 0% chance, I'm not convinced. Anyway, I wish everybody a good Shabbos. Sorry for going a little over.
I had a presentation from your brother-in-law.
Yeah. Wrote this verse on
me.
One of the people, the three people. Well, the three people, I don't know who's the one.